Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. Hi, I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Trump administration's national security advisor threatening a military option against North Korea, in addition to Japan's defense minister sounding the alarm at a meeting in the Philippines with the U.S. and South Korean defense ministers that the nuclear and missile threat from North Korea had reached an unprecedented, critical, and imminent level, requiring different responses. A former U.S. ambassador to South Korea, Donald Gregg, who was Vice President George H.W. Bush's national security advisor, joins us to discuss his concern that Donald Trump is the greatest threat to peace and stability in Asia. He urges the Trump White House to urgently take up the offer by former President Carter to act as an envoy to resume diplomatic dialogue with North Korea before the war of words and reckless threats lead to a war that could see the first nuclear weapons used since Nagasaki, in spite of General McMaster's assertion that there are military options available to deal with North Korea. Then we'll assess the impact of Senator Jeff Flake's impassioned resignation speech before the United States Senate today, in which he lamented the damage being done to the country by Donald Trump and pleaded with his Senate colleagues to show the leadership and courage necessary to oppose the destruction and desecration of American values, appealing to them in the name of our children, who will ask, quote, "Why didn't you do something? Why didn't you speak up?" Joining us to discuss the likelihood that both U.S. Senate seats in Arizona will be contested in the next election is Evan Wyloge, an investigative reporter with the Arizona Center for Investigative Reporting, who previously spent 5 years as a reporter for the Arizona Capital Times. We will discuss the number of Republicans vying for the seats and how much this could be an opportunity for the Democrats and who they might run. Then finally, we will speak about Trump's expected announcement on what he will do about the opioid crisis with Dr. Andrew Kolodny, the co-director of opioid policy research at the Heller School for Social Policy and Management at Brandeis University, who is also the executive director of Physicians for Responsible Opioid Prescribing. He joins us to discuss the article in The New Yorker profiling the Sackler family, who own Purdue Pharma, and how these prominent philanthropists pushed their drug OxyContin to generate billions in profits while creating millions of addicts in what has become America's opioid epidemic. And joining us now is Donald Gregg, a career CIA officer who served as Vice President George H.W. Bush's National Security Advisor and United States Ambassador to South Korea. In 2007, the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies established a foreign policy fellowship in the ambassador's name, and his latest book is Potsherds, Fragments of a Life Lived in CIA, the White House, and the Two Koreas. Welcome to Background Briefing, Donald Gregg.
Delighted to be here.
Well, thank you. And there's been some rather dire warnings coming from the Japanese defense minister at a conference in the Philippines, along with our Secretary of Defense and South Korea's defense minister. I saw the other night on MSNBC General Barry McCaffrey say that we'll be at war with North Korea by the summer. And then the National Security Advisor, General H.R. McMaster, said that threatening a military option in North Korea keeps Kim Jong-un in check, and he defended our president has been really clear. He's not going to permit this regime and Kim Jong-un to threaten the United States with nuclear weapons. He's going to do anything necessary to prevent that from happening. And what Kim Jong-un should recognize is that he thinks the developments of his nuclear capabilities keeping him safer. It's actually the opposite. And then he went on to say that there is no military option. I imagine that's a reference to what Stephen Bannon said. He said that talk is wrong. There are military options. So as somebody that knows the Koreas well and are in contact with North Korean officials in New York, are you alarmed?
Actually, not as much as people might think, because, one, the North Koreans are not suicidal. They know that if they do something heavy to us, they will just be eradicated. We also need to free ourselves from some of the rhetoric of the past that talking is rewarding bad behavior. It is not. Talking is the way to determine clearly what the North Koreans want. And most of our foreign policy people say, well, we don't know what they want. Well, that's because we haven't asked them, and we haven't listened to their response. What they want, I believe, is to be treated with respect. They want to be certain that we do not intend to blow them out of the water, and they want to have some ground upon which they can improve their economy. So I think the way lies open for sending a high-level track two group to North Korea to sit down and talk with them and say, how can we start a dialogue? And I think they would be very interested in that if it were led by somebody they knew and respected. I'm more worried by Trump than I am by Kim Jong-un. And so I think that we need to be aware that the North Koreans want a dialogue with us. They always have. And we just have to be adult enough and mature enough and confident enough to work through to the beginning of a dialogue. And if we do, I think the situation there can be ameliorated fairly quickly.
So would you then suggest that former President Jimmy Carter, who's made himself available, he's apparently had contact with General McMaster in the Trump White House and offered up his services, having already gone to North Korea, dealing with Kim Il-sung and then Kim Jong-il after that. So would that be a useful option?
Well, certainly would. I mean, he's always available. I mean, I would love to see President Obama offer to go because he's a more recent figure. But Jimmy Carter is certainly somebody who the North Koreans know and would take very seriously. So I hope that something like that can take place, because I think there is room for serious dialogue, and we just need to be willing to run those risks. I think that in Kim Jong-un we are dealing with a risk-taking but very courageous young man, and I think he does not want to commit suicide. And I think he strikes a hard bargain, but I think he wants, as most North Koreans have wanted, a very serious, high-level dialogue with the United States. And why we aren't willing to undertake steps to bring that about, I'm not clear.
And Ambassador Gregg, why do you say he's courageous? What is your point there?
Well, I think that he could avoid. I mean, he could sort of be more compliant with us. I mean, he could sort of play footsie with us and sort of kick the can down the road if he wanted to. But he's taking a tougher line, and I think he's right to do so, because I think it's by taking a tougher line that he will get us to take him seriously and really raise the stakes and raise the level of our commitment so that we can get something done.
Well, I think he's got our attention with nuclear tests, with a thermonuclear test, apparently, and with advancements in missile technology that many suggest could result in his ability to strike the U.S. homeland, perhaps even in a matter of months.
Okay, well, then why? Where is the Trump administration? Why don't they respond to that? I mean, I think I am not at all happy with the man who is president of our country. I think there are some people emerging, General Kelly among them, who are trying to hedge him in and push him in the right direction. But the table is set. I think it's our move, and I think we need to make a significant move, but I'm not at all certain that the Trump administration is willing to do it. For example, we don't even have an ambassador in South Korea today. I mean, it's crazy the things we have not done. So we need to get serious. We need to begin to get involved, to commit ourselves, to get high-level people involved and begin to talk to the North Koreans.
And, of course, our Secretary of State has been undercut by our president. The chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee has referred to it as a form of castration. And he did. Trump did tweet out a while back that Rex Tillerson is wasting his time negotiating with the Chinese. What's your sense about China's role? Because China and North Korea are not the best of friends, are they?
They hate each other. Yeah. They hate each other. I mean, we've been trying for years to get China to do our work for us, and they won't. And I think they're wise not to. I mean, in any really lasting, stable settlement is going to involve us from the get-go. The Chinese can act as a lubricant, they can act as a commentator, but we cannot ask them to do what we ourselves have to do if we're really serious on solving this problem with the North Koreans.
Did you read the piece by Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times, who made a recent trip to North Korea?
Yes.
What did you make of that? Because he was suggesting that the foreign ministry people were worried about his safety because the level of patriotism and jingoism has been ramped up by Kim Jong-un, who made a rare appearance on North Korean TV, and that the place is mobilized, and that the hawks in North Korea not only think they could survive a nuclear war, but they could win a nuclear war. So how do you tamp that down?
Well, I think that's crazy on their part, and they shouldn't be allowed to get away with that kind of thinking without it being challenged. And I think the only answer to that is for us to get various serious people with real reputations established who begin to speak to those issues and saying that's nonsense. And to talk of military options is nonsense and is something that involves immeasurable human cost. And the way to avoid that is to start building toward a dialogue with where the stakes can really be dealt with. And we've got to be willing to do that. We've got to be willing to put the people involved in it who carry enough weight to gain the respect of the North Koreans and can get the ball rolling on this issue.
And since you were ambassador to South Korea, Donald Gregg, what's your understanding of how the South Koreans feel about this bellicose rhetoric coming from the Trump White House? Because they're collateral damage, as we are told many times, that the North Koreans have a lot of artillery tubes and rockets aimed at Seoul, and that in any conflict, Seoul would talk about Trump talking about raining down fire and fury. There would be fire and fury rained down on Seoul. And I assume that if there were any evacuations or measures like that, that might ramp up the alarm in the north and be some kind of tripwire. So it seems to me that we're being pretty cavalier about the lives of South Koreans here.
Well, certainly, yes. Certain of our statements have been, particularly by Trump. I think the president of South Korea is a sensible man. He is very much interested in establishing some kind of dialogue, and I think he's made very uncomfortable by some of these statements coming from Trump. That's why I say, to me, Trump is the most unstable, most disturbing figure involved in what we're talking about. And I think he needs to be contained, and he needs to be surrounded and encouraged to say only those things which can pave the way forward, not things that just increase the sense of disorder and fear. There's just too much fear and too much aversion to taking any kind of calculated risk or dialogue floating around here. And I think a lot of it is because of the loose dialogue, particularly from Trump himself.
So you're suggesting that Trump has sort of boxed himself in this kind of macho bravado, and that he can't sort of take that conciliatory step?
Well, he can, but I think that's very much unlike him. I mean, I think that it's, there are people who are saying, can he be made to stop tweeting? Can he be made to think before he speaks? And the answer is doubtful. And so I think that's the reason that he is much more disturbing to me than Kim Jong-un.
Well, apparently, and these reports have not been totally confirmed, but there's been a number of them, that our B-52 fleet, the nuclear triad's bomber, the side of the nuclear triad, and I imagine that would also involve B-1 and B-2 bombers, either have been put on an alert or about to be put on alert, which means that they sit at the end of the runways full of fuel and armed and ready with their crews ready to go at a moment's notice. If that is true, it may well be amping up the pressure on North Korea, as McMaster mentioned, that there are military options, and without saying what they are. But my sense is, if this is true, that the our bombers are on high alert, fueled up, loaded up with bombs, ready to go, wouldn't that alarm the Russians as well, and perhaps even the Chinese?
Would alarm everybody. You know, I have no idea whether this is true or not. I mean, I hope it is not. But, you know, I'm in no position to verify that. But I think that kind of thing is very disturbing. We need to take it seriously and say, how do we de-escalate this? And the way, I think, to de-escalate it is the beginning of a dialogue with the North Koreans, where we say to them, what is it you want? And then we listen to what they say, and we take them seriously, and we push aside those who say, oh, talking to those people is rewarding bad behavior. Well, you know, jaw, jaw, jaw is much better than war, 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 as I guess it was Roosevelt who said.
Winston Churchill, I think it was.
Was it Churchill? Well, that makes it even better.
Well, I like FDR. But in any case, just to touch on, you mentioned earlier, Ambassador Gregg, how much the Chinese and the North Koreans hate each other, and that we keep expecting the Chinese to get our irons out of the fire, and that's just never going to happen. Given that Kim Jong-un killed his uncle, who was apparently the liaison to Beijing, and his older half-brother, who was under the protection of the Chinese, is there any possibility of the Chinese wanting to conduct some kind of coup? Because it seems as though Kim Jong-un is kind of proactive in that regard. He might well be worried about the Chinese. Do the Chinese have intelligence and military assets in North Korea?
I'm sure they do. I know nothing about that, but I don't think they would be in the business of thinking about a coup. I think that's not the way they work, and I certainly would not suggest that line of thinking be supported. I mean, I think we are the central figure that has to get involved, and we have to show that we are serious. We have to show that we are patient. We have to show that we are tough-minded. And that we will listen to solid or sensible things that the North Koreans have to say to us. And that's the way it's got to go. And I think, you know, there's been all kinds of efforts to sort of dodge that. But sooner or later, it's got to be us, and there's no time like the present to get started.
Well, just in closing, though, the assumption is that China is genuinely worried about North Korea, and particularly about its gaining nuclear weapons and now thermonuclear weapons and being provocative, because from the Chinese point of view, as far as I understand, they're worried that this might force the Japanese into spending more on the military, which is already happening. It may even force the Japanese to go nuclear. It may do the same with the South Koreans. And at the very least, it's bringing more U.S. military attention and assets into the neighborhood, which is surely not what the Chinese want.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And it's not what we want. I mean, a nuclear, you know, a proliferation is something we need to work hard against. And the way to stop it is to not let things unravel any farther than they are at this point. And that's why we need to get involved and really raise the stakes and raise the caliber of our involvement and start a dialogue with the North Koreans. And that's, I think, the best thing we can do. It may be difficult for us to do it because we've been rather feckless up to now, but I think it's something we can do and we must do.
So at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to, right? That we have no choice but to negotiate and stop this reckless brinkmanship.
Absolutely.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Bye.
Bye-bye. And again, I've been speaking with Donald Gregg, a career CIA officer who served as Vice President George H.W. Bush's National Security Advisor and the United States Ambassador to South Korea. In 2007, the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies established a foreign policy fellowship in the ambassador's name, and his latest book is Potsherds, Fragments of a Life Lived in CIA, the White House, and the Two Koreas.